If you're my driver, you'll pour me a cup of tea. Get me to a civilized place where I can bathe. Then you'll take me home. Home? Home to my wife, the actress, Sun Moon. And then Ga was being driven to Sun Moon, the only person who could take away the pain he'd suffered in getting to her. A crow towed their Mercedes through the mountain roads, and in the back seat, Ga looked through the box Mungnan had given him. It contained thousands of pictures. Mungnan had clipped together inmates' entrance and exit photos. Back to back, alive and dead, thousands of people. He flipped through the box so that all the exit images faced him. Bodies crushed and torn, and folded in unnatural angles. He recognized victims of cave-ins and beatings. In some pictures, he couldn't tell exactly what he was looking at. Mostly, the dead looked as if they'd gone to sleep, and children, because it was the cold that got them, were curled up in hard little discs, like lozenges. Mungnan was meticulous, and the catalog was complete. This box, he suddenly understood, was the closest thing his nation had to the phone book he'd seen in Texas. He spun the box around, and now facing him were all the entrance photos, in which people were fearful and uncertain, and hadn't quite let themselves imagine the nightmare they were in for, and these photos were even harder to look at. When at last he located his own entrance photo, he turned it slowly, seriously expecting to see himself dead. But it wasn't so. He took a moment to marvel at that. He studied the light in the trees as they flashed by. He watched the motion of the crow ahead, its toe chain tinkling with slackness before snapping taut. He remembered the eggshell spinning whimsically in the crow that had brought him. In his photo, you couldn't see the dying people on cots around him. You couldn't see his hands dripping with bloody ice water. But the eyes. It's unmistakable how they are wide, yet refusing to see what is before them. Such a boy he seems, as if he's still back in an orphanage, believing that all is well and that the fate which befalls all the orphan boys won't befall him. The chalk name on the slate he held seems so foreign. Here was the only photo of that person, the person he used to be. He tore it slowly into strips before letting them flutter out the window. The crow unhitched them in the outskirts of Pyongyang, and at the Koryo Hotel, the girls gave him Commander Ga's usual treatment, the deep soaking and cleansing he sought after every visit to a prison mine. His uniform was cleaned and pressed, and he was bathed in a grand tub, where the girl scrubbed the bloodstains from his hands and tried to repair his nails. And they didn't care whose blood it was that tinted the soapy water, his or Commander Ga's or someone else's. In the warm, buoyant water he came to see that at some point in the last year, his mind and his flesh had separated, that his brain had sat high and frightened, above the mule of his body, a beast of burden that hopefully would make it alone over the treacherous mountain pass of Prison 33. But now as a woman ran a warm washcloth along the arch of his foot, the sensation was allowed to rise up, up into his brain, and it was okay to perceive again, to recognize forgotten parts of his body as they hailed him. His lungs were more than air bellows. His heart, he believed now, could do more than move blood. He tried to imagine the woman he was about to behold. He understood that the real Sun Moon couldn't be as beautiful as the one on the screen, the way her skin glowed, the radiance of her smile, and the particular way her desires took up residence about the eyes. It must be a product of projection, of some cinematic effect. He wanted to be intimate with her, to harbor no secrets, to have nothing between them. Seeing her projected on the wall of the infirmary, that's how it had felt, that there was no snow or cold between them, that she was right there with him, a woman who'd given everything, who'd abandoned her freedom and entered Prison 33 to save him. It had been a mistake to wait until the last moment to tell the second mate's wife about the replacement husbands that awaited her. Ga could see that now. so there was no way he was going to let a secret spoil things with Sun Moon. That was the great thing about their relationship. A new beginning. A chance to unburden all. What the captain had said of getting his wife back would be true of him and Sun Moon as well. They'd be strangers for a while. There would be a period of discovery, but love. Love would eventually return. The women of the Goryeo Hotel toweled him, dressed him. Finally, he took a No. 7 haircut. The one they called Speed Battle, the commander's signature style. In the late afternoon, the Mercedes climbed the final winding road that led to the peak of Mount Taesong. They passed the botanical gardens, the national seed bank, and the hothouses that contained the breeding stocks of Kim Il-sungia and Kim Jong-ilia. They passed the Pyongyang Central Zoo, closed at this hour. On the seat beside him were some of Commander Ga's possessions. There was a bottle of cologne, and he quickly applied some. "This is the smell of me," he thought. He picked up Commander Ga's pistol. "This is my pistol," he thought. He pulled back the slide enough to see a bullet peek from the breech. "I am the kind of man who keeps one in the chamber." Finally, they passed a cemetery whose bronze-busted tombstones glowed orange in the light. This was the Revolutionary Martyrs Cemetery, whose 114 occupants, all of whom had died before they could engender sons, gave names to every orphan in the nation. They reached the peak, and here were three houses, built for the ministers of mass mobilization, prison mines, and procurement. The driver came to a stop before the middle house, and Commander Ga walked through the gate himself, its low slats woven with cucumber vines and the blossoms of a magnificent melon. Nearing Sun Moon's door, he felt his chest tighten with pain, the pain of the captain pressing him with inky needles, of the salt water he splashed on the raw tattoo, of the second mate's wife weeping the infection out with a steaming towel. At the door, he took that breath and knocked. Almost immediately, Sun Moon answered. She wore a loose house robe, under which her breasts swung free. He'd seen such a house robe only once before, in Texas, hanging in the bath of his guest room. That robe was white and fluffy, while Sun Moon's was matted and stained with old sauces. She was without makeup, and her hair was down, falling across her shoulders. Her face was filled with excitement and possibility, and suddenly, he felt the terrible violence of this day leave him. Gone was the combat he'd faced at the hands of her husband. Gone was the look of doom on the warden's face. Wiped away were the multitudes Mongnan had captured on film. This house was a good house. White paint, red trim. It was the opposite of the canning master's house. Nothing bad had happened here, he could tell. "I'm home," he said to her. She looked past him, peering around the yard, the road. "Do you have a package for me?" she asked. "Did the studio send you?" But here she paused, taking in all the inconsistencies. The lean stranger in her husband's uniform, the man wearing his cologne and riding in his car.
"Who are you supposed to be?" she asked.
"I'm Commander Ga," he said, "and I'm finally home."
"You're telling me you've brought no script, nothing?" she asked. "You mean the studio dressed you up like this and sent you all the way up here, and you don't have a script for me? You tell Doc Ho I said that's cold, even for him. He's crossed a line."
"I don't know who Doc Ho is," he said, and marveled at the evenness of her skin, at the way her dark eyes locked on him. "You're even more beautiful than I imagined." She undid the belt of her house robe, then re-cinched it tighter. Then she lifted her hands to the heavens.
"Why do we live on this godforsaken hill?" she asked the sky. "Why am I up here, when everything that matters is down there?"
She pointed to Pyongyang far below, this time of day just a haze of buildings lining the silver Y of the Taedong River. She approached him and looked up into his eyes.
Why can't we live by Mansu Park? I could take an express bus to the studio from there. How can you pretend not to know who Da Ko is? Everybody knows him. Has he sent you here to mock me? Are they all down there laughing at me?
I can tell you've been hurting for a long time, he said. But that's all over now. Your husband's home.
You're the worst actor in the world, she said. They're all down there, at a casting party, aren't they? They're drunk and laughing and casting a new female lead. And they decided to send the worst actor in the world up the hill to mock me.
She fell down to the grass and placed the back of her hand against her forehead.
Go on. Get out of here. You've had your fun. Go tell Doc Ho how the old actress wept.
She tried to wipe her eyes. Then, from her house robe, she produced a pack of cigarettes. She brazenly lit one. It made her look mannish and seductive.
Not a single script. An entire year without a script.
She needed him. It was completely clear how much she needed him. She noticed that the front door was cracked and that her children were peeking out. She hooked loose a slipper and kicked it toward the door, which was quickly pulled shut. I don't know anything about the movie business, he said. But I've brought you a movie as a gift. It's Casablanca, and it's supposed to be the best. She reached up and took the DVD case, dirty and battered, from his hands. She quickly glanced at it.
That one's black and white,
she said, then threw it across the yard.
Plus, I don't watch movies. They'd only corrupt the purity of my acting.
On her back in the grass, she smoked contemplatively.
You really don't have anything to do with the studio?
She asked. He shook his head no. She was so vulnerable before him, so pure. How did she stay so in this harsh world?
So what are you? One of my husband's new flunkies? Sent to check on me while he goes on a secret mission? Oh, I know about his secret missions. He alone is brave enough to infiltrate a whorehouse in Minpo. Only the great Commander Ga can survive a week in a Vladivostok card den.
He crouched beside her. Oh, no. You judge him too harshly. He's changed. Sure, he's a man who's made some mistakes. He's sorry for those. But all that matters now is you. He adores you, I'm sure of it. He's completely devoted to you.
Tell him I can't take much more of this. Please pass that along for me.
I'm him now, he said. So you can tell him yourself. She took a deep breath and shook her head.
So you want to be Commander Ga, huh?
She asked.
Do you know what he'd do to you if he heard you assume his name? His taekwondo tests are for real, you know? They've made an enemy of everyone in this town. That's why I can't get a role anymore. Just make up with the dear leader, won't you? Can't you just bow to him at the opera? Will you give my husband that request from me? That's all it would take, a single gesture, in front of everybody. And the dear leader would forgive all.
He reached to wipe her cheek, but she pulled away.
These tears in my eyes, she said. Do you see them? Can you tell my husband of these tears? She asked. Don't go on any more missions, please. Tell him not to send another flunky to babysit me.
He already knows, he said, and he's sorry. Will you do something for him, a favor? It would mean so much to him. Lying on the grass, she turned to her side, her breast lolling under the house robe, snot running freely from her nose.
Go away, she said.
I'm afraid I can't do that, he said. I told you it's been a long journey, and I've only just arrived. The favor is a small one, Really, it's nothing to a great actress like yourself. You know that part from A True Daughter of the Country, where to find your sister, you must cross the Incheon Strait, still aflame with the sinking battleship Goryeo. And when you wade in, you're just a fishing village girl from Jeju. But after swimming through the corpses of patriots, in blood-red waters, you emerge a different person. Now you are a woman soldier, a half-burned flag in your hands. And the line you say, you know it. Will you say it to me now? She didn't say the words, but he thought he could see them pass through her eyes. There is a greater love, one that from the lowest places calls us high. Yes, they were there in her eyes. That's the sign of a true actress. Being able to speak with just her expressions. Can you sense how right everything feels? He asked her. How everything's going to be different? When I was in prison...
Prison?
She asked. She sat up straight.
How exactly do you know my husband?
Your husband attacked me this morning, he said. We were in a tunnel, in prison 33, and I killed him. She cocked her head.
What?
I mean, I believe I killed him. It was dark, so I can't be sure, but my hands, they know what to do.
Is this one of my husband's tests?
She asked.
If so, it's his sickest one yet. Are you supposed to report back how I responded to that news? Whether I danced for joy or hanged myself in grief? I can't believe he stooped this low. He's a child, really, a scared little boy. Only someone like that would loyalty test an old woman in the park. Only Commander Ga would give his own son a masculinity test. And by the way, his sidekicks eventually get tested too, and when they fail, you don't see them anymore.
Your husband won't be testing anyone ever again, he said. You're all that matters in his life right now. Over time, you'll come to understand that.
Stop it, she said. This isn't funny anymore. It's time for you to leave.
He looked up to the doorway, and standing there silent were the children, a girl perhaps 11, a boy a little younger. They held the collar of a dog with thick shoulders and a shiny coat. Brando, Commander Ga called, and the dog broke free. The Catahoula bounded to him, tail wagging. It kept leaping high to lick his face, then flattening low to nip his heels. You got him, he said to her. I can't believe you got him.
Got him?
She asked. Her voice was suddenly serious.
How do you know its name?
She asked.
We've kept the dog a secret so he won't be taken by the authorities.
How do I know his name? I named him, he said. Right before I sent him to you last year. Brando is the word that Texans use to say something is yours forever.
Wait a minute,
she said. And all the theatrics were gone.
Just who exactly are you?
I'm the good husband. I'm the one who's going to make everything up to you. There was a look on her face that Ga recognized, and it was not a happy one. It expressed an understanding that everything would be different now, that the person you'd been and the life you'd been living were over. It was a tough knowledge to suddenly gain, but it got better with tomorrow's. And it would be easier since she'd probably worn that look once before, when the dear leader gave her, as a prize, to the winner of the Golden Belt, the man who'd beat Kimura. In his dark room, in Division 42, the smoldering cigarette in Commander Ga's lips was nearly finished. It had been a long day, and the memory of Sun Moon had saved him yet again. But it was time to put her away in his mind. She'd always be there when he needed her. He smiled a last time at the thought of her, causing the cigarette to fall from his mouth into the well where his neck curved into collarbone. There it burned slowly against his skin, a tiny red glow in an otherwise black room. Pain? What was pain?
Citizens, we bring good news. In your kitchens, in your offices, on your factory floors, wherever you hear this broadcast, turn up the volume. The first success we have to report is that our grass into meat campaign is a complete triumph. Still, much more soil needs to be hauled to the rooftops, so all housing block managers are instructed to schedule extra motivation meetings. Also, this month's recipe contest is upon us, citizens. The winning recipe will be painted on the front wall of the central bus terminal for all to copy down. The winner will be the citizen who submits the best recipe for celery root noodles. Now for world news. Naked aggression continues from America. Currently, two nuclear attack groups are parked in the East Sea, while in the U.S. mainland, homeless citizens lie urine-soaked in the streets. And in poor South Korea, our soiled little sister, there is more flooding and hunger. Don't worry, help is on the way. Dear leader Kim Jong-il has ordered that sandbags and food shipments be sent south right away. Finally, the first installment of this year's Best North Korean Story begins today. Close your eyes and picture for a moment our national actress Sun Moon. Banish from your minds the foolish stories and gossip that have lately swirled our city about her. Picture her the way she will live forever in our national consciousness. Remember her famous with fever scene in Woman of a Nation? Where, following her rape at the hands of the Japanese, the sweat ran from her brow to meet with moonlight, the tears upon her cheek, only to tumble down to her patriotic breasts? How can one tear, tracing its brief journey, start as a drop of ruin, trail into a drip of resolution, and finally splash with national fervor? Certainly, citizens, fresh in your minds is the final image of motherless fatherland, in which Sun Moon, clad only in bloodied gauze, emerges from the battlefield having saved the national flag, while behind her, the American army is in ruins, foundering and aflame. Now imagine her house, perched on the scenic cliffs of Mount Taesong. From below rose the purifying scents of Kim Jong-ilia and Kim Il-sungia being grown in the botanical garden's hothouses. And beyond that, the Central Zoo, the most profitable zoo in the world, with over 400 animals available, live and preserved. Picture Sun Moon's children, their angelic natures filling the house with honorific Sanjo music, courtesy of the boys Taegum and the girls Kayagum. Even our national actress must help the cause of the people, so she was canning kelp to prepare her family should another arduous march occur. Kelp washes ashore in quantities to feed millions, and once dried, can also be used for bedding, insulation, masculine virility, and firing of local megawatt stations. See Sun Moon's glimmering Chosun Ot as she purged the jars. Observe how the steam may glisten the contours of her womanness. There was a knock at the door. No one ever knocked at this door. So out of the way is their house. This is the safest nation in the world, where crime is unheard of, so she didn't fear for herself. Yes, she hesitated. Her husband was the hero Commander Ga, often away on dangerous missions, as he was right now. What if something had befallen him, and here was a messenger of the state to deliver the bad news? She knew that he truly belonged to his nation, to his people, and that she shouldn't think of him as hers, and yet she did. Such was her love. How could she help it? When the door opened, there stood Commander Ga. His uniform was crisp, and on his chest were pinned both the ruby star and the eternal flame of Juche. He stepped inside, and at the sight of Sun Moon's great beauty, he brazenly undressed her with his eyes. Look at how he ogled her curves beneath her housecoat, how he studied the ways in which each small motion of her body heaved her chest. Look at how this coward treated the great Korean modesty of Sun Moon like rubbish. The good citizen is thinking, How can you call the hero Commander Ga a coward? Did Commander Ga not famously complete 6 assassination missions via the tunnels under the DMZ? Does he not hold the golden belt in Taekwondo, the most deadly martial art in the world? Did Ga not win for his bride the cinema actress Sun Moon, star of the movies Immortally Devoted and Oppressor's Tumble? The answer, citizens, is that this was not the genuine Commander Ga. Look at the photo of the real Commander Ga on the wall behind this imposter. The man in the picture had broad shoulders, a crenellated brow, and teeth worn down from aggressive grinding. Now look at the spindly man wearing the commander's uniform. Sunken chest, girl's ears, barely the notion of a noodle in his trousers. Certainly it is an insult to do this imposter the honor of being called Commander Ga. But for the beginning of this story, it will suffice. He commanded, "I am Commander Ga, and you will treat me as such." Even though all her instincts told her this was not true, she was wise to set aside her own feelings and trust the guidance of a government official, for he bore the rank of minister. When in doubt, always look to your leaders for proper behavior. For 2 full weeks, though, she was wary of him. He had to sleep in the tunnel with the dog, and he was only allowed out to taste of the broth that she prepared once daily for him. His body was lean, but he did not complain of the thin soup. Every day she drew a hot bath for him, and he was allowed to enter the house from the tunnel to cleanse his body. Then, like a dutiful wife, Sun Moon bathed in his leftover wash water. Finally, it was back to the tunnel with a canine, an animal not meant to be domesticated. For an entire year, this beast had chewed the furniture and urinated at will. No amount of beatings from Sun Moon's husband could get the dog to obey. Now, Commander Ga spent his time in the tunnel training the animal to sit and lie down, as well as other indolent phrases from capitalism. Worst of the commands was hunt, which encouraged the beast to poach game from the public lands of the people. For 2 weeks, this is the routine they kept. As if by maintaining it, the real husband would simply enter one day and all would be as if he never disappeared. As if the current man in her house were nothing but a smoker's intermission in one of her epic film performances. Certainly this was difficult for the actress. Look at her posture. Observe how she stood flat-footed, arms crossed. But did she think the pain in her movies was pretend? Did she think the portrayal of national suffering was fiction? Did she think she could be the face of a Korea that has been dealt 1,000 years of blows without losing a husband or two? For Commander Ga, or whoever he really was, he thought he had finished with a life of tunnels. This tunnel was a small one, large enough to stand inside, sure, but barely 15 meters in length, just enough to travel under the front yard and perhaps under the road. Inside were barrels of supplies for the next arduous march. There was a single light bulb and a single chair. There was a large collection of DVDs, though no sign of a screen on which to view them. Yet he was happy listening to the boy above blow the wobbly notes of his tegum. It was bliss to hear the pluckings of a mother teaching her daughter the melancholy way of the kayagum. He could picture their chosun uts spread wide across the floor as they leaned into the sorrowful notes. Late at night, the actress paced behind the closed doors of the bedroom, and in his tunnel, Commander Ga could almost watch her feet fall. So closely did he follow her movements. In his mind, he mapped the bedroom based on how many steps she took between the window and the door, and by the way she moved around certain objects, he was sure of the location of her bed and wardrobe and vanity. It was almost as if he were in the chamber with her. On the morning of the 14th day, he had accepted that this was how his life might continue for a long time, and he was at peace with that. But little did he know, a dove was headed his way with the most glorious message in his beak. Loosed from the capital, the dove's wings fluttered above the Taedong River turning in its bends sweet and green, while along the banks, patriots and virgins strolled hand in hand. The doves swooped through girls from a Juche youth troop, skipping along in their darling uniforms, axes over their shoulders, heading to chop wood in Mansu Park. With delight, the white bird barrel rolled through the May Day Stadium, largest in the world, then clapped its wings in pride over the great red flame of the Tower of Juche. Then up, up Mount Taesong, bending a wing in greeting toward the flamingos and peacocks in the Central Zoo, before veering wide from the electric fences surrounding the botanical gardens, ready to repel the next American sneak attack. A single patriotic tear was shed above the Revolutionary Martyrs Cemetery, and then the dove was on Sun Moon's windowsill, dropping the note in her hand. Commander Ga looked up when the trapdoor to the tunnel was opened and Sun Moon leaned down, her robe opening slightly, the glory of a whole nation seemingly embosomed in her generous womanliness. She read the note. "It is time, Commander Ga, to return to work." The driver was waiting to take Commander Ga into the most beautiful city in the world. Observe his wide streets and tall buildings. Try to find a single item of trash or stray mark of graffiti. Graffiti, citizens, is the name for the way capitalists deface their public buildings. Here are no annoying advertisements, cellular phones, or planes in the sky. And try to take your eyes off our traffic, girls. Soon Commander Ga was on the third floor of Building 13, the most modern office complex in the world. Whoosh, whoosh went the vacuum tubes all around him. Flicker, flicker went the green computer screens. He found his desk on the third floor, then turned his nameplate inward, as if to remind himself that he was Commander Ga, and his job was Minister of Prison Mines, that it was he who was in charge of the finest prison system in the world. "Ah, there is no prison like a North Korean prison. So productive, so conducive to personal reflection. Prisons in the South are filled with jukeboxes and lipstick, places where men sniff glue and ripen each other's fruit." A whoosh dropped a vacuum tube into the hopper on Commander Ga's desk. He opened the tube and removed a note, scribbled on the back of a requisition form. It read, "Prepare for the dear leader." He looked around the room for the author of the note, but all the phone sweepers were hard at work typing what they heard over their blue headsets, and the procurement teams had their heads buried under the black cloth of their computer hoods. Out the window, light rain had begun to fall, and Commander Ga could make out an old woman in a shift, now nearly see-through, making her way through the upper branches of an oak tree, hunting down acorns, which all citizens know is forbidden until acorn harvesting season is officially declared. Perhaps years of prison inspection had given the commander a soft spot for our older citizens. It was then that the entire vacuum system came to a halt. And in the eerie silence that followed, everyone looked up to the maze of clear tubes overhead, knowing what was to follow. The system was being prepared for a personal delivery from the dear leader himself. Suddenly, the sucking whistle began again, and all eyes watched as a golden tube snaked its way through the system to land in the hopper at the edge of Commander Ga's desk. Commander Ga removed the golden tube. The note inside read only, "Would you do us the courtesy of your presence?" The tension in the room was palpable. Was it possible that Commander Ga was not leaping high to run to the aid of his glorious leader? No. Instead, he fumbled with the items on his desk, choosing to inspect more closely a device called a Geiger counter, made to detect the presence of nuclear materials, for our country is rich in deeply buried nuclear materials. Did he make a plan to put this valuable piece of equipment to work? Did he assign it a guardian for safekeeping? No, citizens. Commander Ga took this detector and climbed out the window, where he stepped onto a wet oak bough. Climbing high, he handed it to the old woman, saying, "Sell this at the night market, then buy yourself a proper meal." Of course, citizens, he lied. There is no such thing as a night market. What's important is that no one looked up when God returned through the window. All kept working as he brushed wet leaves from his uniform. In the South, workers would be titty-weeping that someone had broken the rules by giving away government property. But here, discipline reigns, and people know that nothing happens without a purpose, that no task goes unnoticed, that if a man gives an old woman in an oak tree a nuclear detector, he does so because the dear leader wishes him to. That if there are two commander gods, or one, or none, it is as the dear leader desires. Walking toward his destiny, Commander God caught the eye of Comrade Byuk, who threw him the thumbs-up sign. Some people may find Comrade Byuk humorous, or even jaunty. Sure, he has an adorable scar splitting his brow that, owing to his wife's inability to sew, no longer connected. But remember that the thumbs-up was the signal the Yanks gave before dropping their payloads upon the innocents of North Korea. Just watch the movies, and you'll see the smiles, the thumbs-up, and then the bombs falling on Mother Korea. Watch Sneak Attack, starring God's own lovely wife. Watch The Last Day of March, which dramatizes the day in 1951 in which the Americans dropped 120,000 tons of napalm, leaving only three buildings standing in Pyongyang. So give Byuk a thumbs down and pay no more attention to him. His name, regrettably, will be heard from time to time, but he is no longer a character in this story, and you are to henceforth ignore him. End of Commander Ga. However lacking, however feeble you have judged his character, know that this is a story of growth and redemption, one in which enlightenment is gained by the lowliest of figures. Let this story be an inspiration when dealing with the weak-minded who share your communal housing blocks and the selfish who use all the soap in your group bathing wells. Know that change is achievable and that happy endings do come. For this story promises to have the happiest ending you will ever hear. An elevator was waiting for Commander Ga. Inside was a beautiful woman in a white and navy uniform with blue-tinted sunglasses. She did not speak. The elevator had no controls, and she made no movement. How it descended and whether she operated it, Ga couldn't tell. But soon, they were dropping deep under Pyongyang. When the doors opened, he found himself in a glorious room where gifts from other world leaders adorned the walls. There were rhino horn bookends from Robert Mugabe, Supreme President of Zimbabwe, a black lacquer longevity mask from Guy de Grève, Foreign Minister of Haiti, and a silver happy birthday platter signed to the dear leader by every member of Myanmar's central junta. Suddenly, there was a bright light. Emerging from this was the dear leader, so confident, so tall, striding toward Commander Ga. And Commander Ga felt all his earthly worries fall away as a sense of well-being overtook him. It was as if his very being were cupped within the dear leader's own protective hands, and he felt only an urge to serve the glorious nation that has spawned such confidence in him. Commander Gao bowed deeply and with total supplication. The dear leader clasped him firmly and spoke, "Please, enough bowing, my good citizen. It has been too long, Gao, too long. Your nation needs you now. I have a delicious bit of mischief planned for our American friends. Are you willing to help?" Why, citizens, did the dear leader show no distress at the appearance of this imposter? What is the dear leader's plan? Will the extended sadness of the actress Sun Moon be lifted? Find out tomorrow, citizens, when we deliver the next installment of this year's Best North Korean Story.
The elevator plummeted deep into Bunker 13, where Commander Ga would meet the dear leader. Ga felt a sharp pain in his eardrums, and his body felt limp, as if he were free-falling back into a prison mine. Seeing Comrade Byuk, his smile, his thumbs up, had opened a void in Commander Ga between the person he used to be and the person he'd become. Comrade Byuk was the only person who existed on both sides of Commander Ga's void, who knew both the young hero who'd gone to Texas and the new husband of Sun Moon, the most dangerous man in Pyongyang. Now Ga felt rattled. He felt newly aware that he wasn't invincible, that it wasn't destiny in control of him, but danger. When the elevator doors opened, deep in Bunker 13, a team of elite bodyguards gave Commander Ga an 11-point body search, though it was nothing worse than what he'd experienced each time he'd returned from Japan. The room was white and cold. They took a cup of urine from him and a clipping of hair. He barely got his clothes back on before he heard the clacking of heels growing louder in the hall outside as guards saluted the approach of the dear leader. Then the door simply opened, and in stepped Kim Jong-il. He wore a gray jumpsuit and designer glasses that amplified the playfulness in his eyes.
"There you are, Ga," he said. "We missed you."
Commander Ga gave a long, deep bow, fulfilling his first promise to Sun Moon. The dear leader smiled.
"That wasn't so hard," he said. "That didn't cost you anything, did it?"
He placed a hand on Ga's shoulder and looked up into his eyes.
"But the bow must come in public. Isn't that what I told you?"
Commander Ga said, "Can't a man practice?"
"There's the guy I love,"
the dear leader said. On the table was a mounted Siberian fox posed mid-pounce above a white vole, a gift of Konstantin Durasov, mayor of Vladivostok. The dear leader looked as though he might admire the fur of the fox, but instead he stroked the vole, its teeth bared against the threat above.
"I should still be cross with you, Ga," he said. "I can't even count your wrongdoings. You let our most productive prison burn, along with 1,500 of our best inmates. I'm still trying to explain to the Chinese premier your episode at that bathhouse in Shenyang. My driver of 20 years, he's still in a coma. The new one drives fine, but I miss the old one. His loyalty had been tested many times."
Here, the dear leader returned to him. With a hand on the shoulder, the dear leader pressed Ga to his knees, so the dear leader now towered above.
"And what you said to me at the opera, that cannot be unsaid. Your head would be the only way to restore the injury. And what leader wouldn't wish you gone, to disappear forever, for all the trouble you cause? Do you forget that I gave you Sun Moon? Still, I have a soft spot for your antics. Yes, I will give you one more chance. Do you accept a new mission from me?"
Commander Ga looked down and nodded.
"Up then," the dear leader said. "Dust yourself off. Grab hold of your dignity again."
He indicated a platter from the table.
"Dried tiger meat?"
he asked.
"Do eat, and pocket some for that son of yours. That boy could use some tiger. When you eat of the tiger, you become like the tiger. That's what they say."
Commander Ga took a piece. It was hard and tasted sweet.
"I can't eat the stuff," the dear leader said. "It's the teriyaki flavor, I think. The Burmese have sent this as a gift. You know my collected works are being published in Rangoon? You must write your works, Commander. They will be volumes on Taekwondo, I hope."
He clapped Commander Ga on the back.
"We sure have missed your Taekwondo."
The dear leader led Commander Ga out of the room and down a long white hallway that slowly serpentined back and forth. Should the Yanks attack, they'd get no line of fire longer than 20 meters. The tunnels under the DMZ slowly curved the same way. Otherwise, a single South Korean private, shooting through a mile of darkness, could counter an entire invasion. They passed many doors, and rather than offices or residences, They seemed to house the dear leader's many ongoing projects.
I have a good feeling about this mission, the dear leader said. When was the last time we embarked on one together?
It has been too long to remember, Commander Goss said.
Eat, eat,
the dear leader said as they strolled.
It's true, what they say. Your prison work has taken a toll on you. We must get your strength back. But you still have the Ga good looks, yes? And that beautiful wife. I'm sure you're glad to have her back. Such a fine actress. I'll have to compose a new movie role for her.
From the flat ping of his footsteps echoing back, Ga knew hundreds of meters of rock were above him. You could learn to perceive such depth. In the prison mines, you could feel the ghostly vibration of ore carts moving through other tunnels. You couldn't exactly hear the rotohammers biting in the other shafts, but you could feel them in your teeth. And when there was a blast, you could tell its location in the mountain by the way dust was slapped off the walls.
I have called you here, the dear leader said as they walked, because the Americans will be visiting soon, and they must be dealt a blow, the kind that hits under the ribs and takes the breath away, but leaves no visible mark. Are you up for this task?
Does the ox not yearn for the yoke when the people are hungry? The dear leader laughed.
This prison work has done wonders for your sense of humor, he said. So tense you used to be, so serious. All those spontaneous taekwondo lessons you delivered.
I'm a new man, Ga said.
Ha!
The dear leader said.
If only more people visited the prisons.
The dear leader stopped before a door, considered it, then moved on to the next. Here he knocked, and with the buzz of an electric bolt, the door opened. The room was small and white. Only boxes were stacked inside.
I know you keep close tabs on the prisons, Ga,
the dear leader said, ushering him in.
And here is our problem. In prison 33, there was a certain inmate, a soldier from an orphan unit. Legally, he was a hero. He has gone missing, and we need his expertise. Perhaps you met him, and perhaps he shared some of his thoughts with you.
Gone missing?
Yes, I know. It's embarrassing, no? The warden has already paid for this. In the future, this won't be a problem, as we have a new machine that can find anyone, anywhere. It's a master computer, if you will. Remind me to show it to you.
So, who is this soldier? The dear leader started to sort through boxes, opening some, tossing others aside, looking for something. One box was filled with barbecue tools, Ga observed. Another was filled with South Korean Bibles.
The orphan soldier? An average citizen, I suppose, the dear leader said. A nobody from Chongjin. Ever visit that place?
Never had that pleasure, dear leader.
Me either. Anyway, this soldier, he went on a trip to Texas. Had some security skills, language talents, and so on. The mission was to retrieve something the Americans took from me. The Americans, it seems, had no intention of returning this item. Instead, they subjected my diplomatic team to 1,000 humiliations, and when the Americans visit us, I will subject them to 1,000 in return. To do this right, I must know exact details of this visit to Texas. The orphan soldier, he is the only one who knows these.
Certainly there were other diplomats on the visit. Why not ask them?
Sadly, they are no longer reachable, the dear leader said. The man I speak of, he is currently the only one in our nation who's been to America.
Then the dear leader found what he was looking for, a large revolver. He hefted it around in the direction of Commander Ga.
"Ah, I suddenly remember,"
Ga said, looking at the pistol. "The orphan soldier. A lean, good-looking man, very smart, and humorous. Yes, he was certainly in Prison 33.
"So you know him?"
"Yes, we often spoke late into the night. We were like brothers. He told me everything."
The dear leader handed Ga the revolver.
"Do you recognize this?"
"It looks just like the revolver the orphan soldier described, the one they used in Texas to shoot cans off the fence. A .45 caliber, Smith & Wesson, I believe."
"You do know him. Now we are getting somewhere. But look closer. This revolver is North Korean. It was constructed by our own engineers and is actually a .46 caliber, a little bigger, a little more powerful than the American model. Do you think it will embarrass them?"
Inspecting it, Commander Ga could see that the parts had been hand-milled on a lathe. On the barrel and cylinder were notches the smith had used to align the action.
"It most certainly will, dear leader. I would only add that the American revolver, as my good friend, the orphan soldier, described it, had little grooves on the hammer, and the grips were not pearl, but carved antler of deer."
"Ah,"
the deer leader said.
"This is exactly the kind of thing we're looking for, exactly."
Then from another box, he produced an Old West-style gun belt, hand-tooled and low-slung, and this he placed himself around Commander Ga's waist.
"There are no bullets yet," the deer leader said. "These the engineers are at pains to produce, one shell at a time. For now, wear the gun. Get the feel. Yes, the Americans are going to see that we can make their guns only bigger and more powerful. We are going to serve them American biscuits, but they will discover that Korean corn is more hearty, that honey from Korean bees is more sweet. Yes, they will trim my lawn, and they will ingest whatever foul cocktail I concoct. And you, Commander Ga, you will help us construct an entire Potemkin, Texas, right here in Pyongyang."
"But dearly..."
"The Americans,"
he said with a flash of anger.
"We sleep with the dogs from the Central Zoo."
Commander Ga waited a moment. When he was sure the dear leader felt he had been heard and understood, he said, "Yes, dear leader. Just tell me when the Americans visit."
"Whenever we want,"
the dear leader said.
"We haven't actually contacted them yet."
"My good friend, the orphan soldier, once when I visited his prison, he told me that the Americans were very reluctant to make contact with us."
"Oh, the Americans are coming,"
the dear leader said.
"They're going to deliver what they took from me. They're going to get humiliated. And they're going home with nothing."
"How?" Ga asked. "How will you bring them here?" Now the dear leader smiled.
"That's the best part," he said.
He led Ga to the end of the curving hall where there was a staircase. They took metal stairs down several floors with the dear leader trying to hide a limp. Soon seeps of water ran down the walls and the metal rail became rusted and loose. When Commander Ga leaned over the rail to see how far down the steps went, there was nothing but darkness and echoes. The dear leader at last stopped on a landing and opened a door to a new hall, this one much different. Here, each door they passed had a small reinforced window and a swing arm lock. Commander Ga knew a prison when he saw one.
"Seems pretty lonely down here," he said.
"Don't feel that way,"
the dear leader said without looking back.
"You've got me."
"What about you?" Ga asked. "You come down here alone?" The deer leader stopped before a door and pulled out a solitary key. He looked at Commander Ga and smiled.
"I'm never alone," he said, and opened the door.
Inside the room was a tall, skinny woman, her face hidden by shaggy dark hair. Before her were spread many books, and she was writing by the light of a lamp whose cord disappeared into a hole in the cement ceiling. Silent, she gazed up at them.
"Who is she?"
Commander Guy asked.
"Ask her yourself. She speaks English,"
the deer leader said, then turned to the woman.
"You bad girl,"
he told her. He had a grand smile on his face.
"Bad, bad, bad girl."
Ga approached and crouched down, so they were at eye level.
"Who are you?"
he asked in English. She eyed the gun on his hip and shook her head, as if revealing anything might bring harm upon her. Here, Ga saw that the books before the woman were English versions of the 11-volume Selected Works of Kim Jong-il, which she was transcribing into notebooks, stacks of them, word for word. He cocked his head and saw she was transcribing a tenet from Volume 5 called On the Art of the Cinema. "The actress cannot play a role," Ga read. "She must, in an act of martyrdom, sacrifice herself to become the character." The deer leader smiled in approval at the sound of his own words.
"She's quite the pupil," he said.
The deer leader motioned for her to take a break. She set her pencil down and began rubbing her hands. This caught Commander Ga's attention. He leaned in close.
"Will you show me your hands?"
he asked. He extended his own hands, palms up, to demonstrate. Slowly, she revealed them. Her hands were thick with gray, pitted calluses, rows of them, right to the pads of her fingertips. Commander Ga closed his eyes and nodded in recognition at the thousands of hours at the oars that had made her hands this way. He turned to the deer leader.
"How?"
he asked.
"Where did you find her?" "A fishing boat picked her up,"
the deer leader said.
"It was just her alone in her rowboat, no friend in sight. She'd done a bad thing to her friend, a very bad thing. The captain rescued her and set the boat ablaze."
With some delight, the deer leader pointed a finger of naughtiness at the girl.
"Bad girl, bad,"
he said.
"But we forgive her. Yes, what's past is past. Such things happen, it can't be helped. Do you think the Americans will visit now? Do you think the senator will soon regret making my ambassadors eat without cutlery, outside, among dogs?"
"We'll have to get many specific items," Commander Goss said. "If our American welcome party is to succeed, I'll need the help of Comrade Byok."
The deer leader nodded. Commander Goss returned to the woman.
"I hear you've talked to whale sharks," he said to her, "and navigated by the glow of jellyfish."
"It didn't happen the way they say it did,"
she said.
"She was like my sister, and now I'm alone. It's just me." "What's she saying?"
the deer leader asked.
"She says she's alone."
"Nonsense," the deer leader said. "I'm down here all the time. I offer her comfort."
"They tried to board our boat," she said. "Linda, my friend, she fired flares at them. It's all we had to defend ourselves with, but they kept coming. They shot her right there, right in front of me. Tell me, how long have I been down here?"
Commander Ga removed the camera from his pocket.
"May I?"
he asked the deer leader.
"Oh, Commander Ga,"
the deer leader said, shaking his head.
"You and your cameras. At least this time it's a female you're taking a picture of."
Would you like to meet a senator?
Ga asked her.
Guardedly, she nodded.
You keep your eyes open in this place, he said. No more rowing with your eyes closed.